A minute or two after 9 o'clock, we need to get started. Have you take your seat. We appreciate your being here today. To introductions, let me start with the introductions. To my far left, Jake Albrecht from the southern region. Next to him, Bill Fenimore from the northern region, and we're glad to see Bill back with us today. Glad to see things working out a little bit for him. And then we have Calvin Crandall from the central region, Ernie Perkins next to me from the northern region, myself, Del Brady. A new man on our board is our new state director, Greg Sheehan, and we're glad to have him here with us. Certainly feel like he's going to be a real good influence on the DWR. And then John Baer from the central region. And to the far right, Mike King from Price in the southeast region. Our two fabulous women we have helping us, Stacy Coons in the white, and Tuvo, this is your first time. We're glad to have you with us, too. Thank you. Tuvo Wood. Okay.
Good luck sitting over there.
Our rack chairs starting here. From the northern region, Robert Bryan from the northern region. Boyd Blackwell sitting in for Floyd Coles for the northeast region. Fred Oswald from the central region. Darius Jones from the southeast region. And Steve Flinders from our famous southern region. Glad to have you all here today. Okay. Start our agenda. The first thing I'll do is ask for an approval of that agenda. Before I do so, our appeal hearings this afternoon, we don't have one really. We just have a motion to dismiss. So that's a change to the agenda as I have written here. With that, do we have a motion to approve that agenda?
So moved.
A second? Seconded by John. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous? Then approval of the minutes, last board meeting's minutes. Anybody have any change? I think you had a couple, Ernie.
Yeah, I put in two very minor ones by email, name spellings and things like that. They were a great set of minutes.
Any other changes? No, let's have a motion to approve them as revised.
I'll move we approve the minutes.
Thank you, Mike. Mike?
Second that.
Calvin seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Next thing, old business, the action log. Ernie, do you want to go over that for us?
Yeah, we only had one item on the action log that was going to be considered at this meeting, and that was the preference point for general season deer log item that we created last June. The division had intended to bring that out to the RAC meetings that have been completed and to this board meeting as an action item. But when they went through their final review process, there was enough internal discussion on options and preferences on how to adjust the system that we've got that they decided to shelve it, as we heard during our work meeting yesterday. So I anticipate that there's no objection from the board members that it will now be some time from now, perhaps the next work meeting, we could ask for an update from the division on where they're at coming up with the direction they think we could head to get where we think we ought to go, and then that would go out to the RACs and the board a year from now. And we'll live with what we've got for one more year.
Hey, with me.
That's it for today, then. And I think we've got several. Go ahead, Mike.
Are you ready to finish, or were you going to bring other things up?
I think we're going to pick up several items during the meeting that may be related to topics that we've got. If you got a separate one you'd like to
I've got one. I just want to throw out and see how the board feels about it. The issue came up just a little bit yesterday. We had a little bit of a discussion, and I've had some questions, and I know some others from the board have had a few questions about this too, and that's the issue of magnification on muzzle loaders and how that impacts folks that aren't seeing quite as well as they used to as they age a little bit. And I know from what we heard yesterday, there was a discussion about this, pretty significant discussion 10 or 12 years ago, but it's been a while since that's been looked at. And so I wonder about the possibility of adding that to the action log as a discussion item for the division to look at this and maybe just give us a report on the different issues that surround this using a magnified scope on a muzzleloader. I think currently it's one power or something like that is okay. And I guess there's some technology with red dot scopes that might solve the problem for some individuals. But there are lots of questions out there, I think, that may warrant some answers, even if it's just to provide some basic information on why we do what we do. So, you know, things like the red dot scope, how that can solve the problem, if in fact it does. Other things like what would happen if we had a two power scope or a higher power scope and it increased the success rate of the, you know, I don't know what would happen, but if it increased the success rate, do we run the risk of over-harvesting in an area and putting it below its objective and then having to reduce permits down the road somewhere? So I guess those are the kind of questions, you know, the social issues that surround it and, you know, how many other states are using this kind of technology and
are you thinking of having that come back to the board at a work meeting?
Yeah, back to the board sometime whenever the division felt like they could come up with some of those kind of answers.
Is there a second?
Marty? Yes, let me have Marty weigh in on that.
This may be helpful as you go through this. Is currently within our rule that allows for accommodations for disabled people, magnifying scopes can be used on muzzleloaders during the muzzleloader season if you meet certain vision acuity requirements. And what the rule says is that if you have worse than 20/40 corrected visual acuity, then you're qualified to get a COR for a scope. So to the extent that we want to deal with folks who may have less than perfect vision, there is a remedy for that right now. If we want to talk about during an any weapon hunt, should we allow magnifying scopes to anyone that wishes to use them, that might be another issue.
We had a little discussion about that yesterday. I thought that was the case, and luckily Mr. Fowkes was there to correct my error in thought. So I still think that this might be, you know, something that we'd want to look at, maybe clean up that part of the rule.
Are you seconding?
Yes, I will second that.
Got a quick vote then? Who supports having this discussion at a future work meeting and asking the division for ophthalmological and other information that would help us reach a good decision?
I would think that we need to make, just to clarify what we're voting on, I think the issue that Mike brought up and then also the issue of a magnified or a magnification on a muzzleloader during a rifle hunt, if we could get information on that and maybe what we need to do there to make things better if we need to do anything. So.
And then just a question on the visual acuity part. I don't know this because I'm not an ophthalmologist, but does 20/40 vision mean that you can see 28 inches to the end of your barrel or not? When you I can't, and I have, you know, 20/20 vision that's corrected. But
And I, when we wrote this, I talked with ophthalmologists about that. You can get a driver's license with 20/40 corrected vision if that's the best you can. So it's a fairly liberal standard. I don't know that it addresses the issue, which I also have, is I wear contacts to see at a distance, which changes my vision up close. And so trying to focus on a front sight or a rear sight, a front sight, and a distant target at the same time is a bit of a challenge, but a one power scope solves that for me. So the question is, magnification, is that necessary? And in talking with ophthalmologists when we put this together, they felt that was a pretty good standard for people with vision problems on a muzzleloader hunt. I say this issue is also, we're talking about, should a magnified scope be allowed on a muzzleloader during any weapon hunt? They're magnifying scope on a centerfire rifle. The question is, why not on a muzzleloader? So,
Ernie, do we need to specify what work session or when we would want to see that again?
We need to do something.
I think Mike suggested as soon as the division was ready on that.
It's the next work session.
Any,
we have.
I think the next work session right now, schedule's not till May, is it?
May, that's correct.
Is that enough time? Is it? Could you do it quicker than that?
She head nods at the back of the room.
They can do anything.
So let's just include that specifically in the motion.
Yeah, that we'd look at that in May.
In May at the work meeting, then. That's like the 1st of May, I think.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Done.
Thanks.
Unanimous. And that completes the action log for the day.
Hey, thank you.
We'll await other items coming in, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay. Item 4 on our agenda is an update from our new director, Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this is my first official meeting on this side of the bench up here. I've spent a lot of time out there. That was more comfortable out there. So, but I'm excited to be up here and working with you. Kind of a quick overview of a few things before I get into some of the details of what's going on in the division. First of all, I'm excited to work with all of you on the board here. We have a great board right now. It's exciting. I think we can do a lot of good things, and I hope that we'll continue to work closely with the division in solving many of the problems that we have out there. I also want to reach out to the RAC chairs and RAC members out there who do a good job, spend a lot of time meeting, trying to solve local issues and bring those concerns and attentions to the Wildlife Board here, and I know they appreciate that as well. And then to our employees, we have a lot of great employees in the division, hundreds of great employees in this division, and I appreciate all their hard work and dedication. I've been made a commitment to go out and meet with each of our employees, and we're getting into that pretty well now. That's taking some time. And it'll take me a little time to work throughout the state, but it's very important that I have a good understanding of where our employees are at so I can help communicate that to the board and the RACs and our constituent groups and the media and others. So I'm trying to learn as quick as I can, and I appreciate all the input that they're giving me. And then lastly, to our constituent groups out there, there's a lot of dedicated organizations out there. Our sportsman's group out there, some of our other groups who have interest in wildlife watching and different things, appreciate all their support that they do day in and day out to recognize our wildlife, to spend time out there, time and resources to help promote what we're all trying to achieve. As we move forward, I'm excited. I think there's a lot of good coalition. A couple of things I want to make sure I accomplish. I think all of you are on the same page on this. We want to create more opportunities for everyone out there. We want to get, for those who hunt and fish, we want to, get those deer herds back, make more opportunities for fishing. Make sure we achieve those things. And at the same time, we've got to make sure we address some of the difficult things, the challenges with sage grouse and prairie dogs and things that where we need to continue protecting wildlife. We also need to acknowledge, some of the challenges that we have with others out there, communities, industry, different things. So those are some difficult things that will maneuver through, and hopefully it will work out great for our communities and our citizens and for the wildlife that everyone here is interested in protecting. That's what we're all been chartered to do. I guess I would ask, be patient as I work through all this. You know, I'm up here at the board, and you sit out there, which I've done for many, many years, and you kind of watch. Then I come up here, and this is all different. You know, it's amazing how you can move 15 feet across the room, and it all looks a little bit different. So, but you can duck back here. I didn't realize there's a lot of rock and stuff to hide back here, so that might be good. Anyway, a couple internal updates. First of all, in the director's office, Cindy Jensen, our assistant director, who now has over 40 years in with the division, has elected to retire. Her last day will be January 1st, so the division will miss her. She's been a great friend to hundreds of us over the years and done such a good job making sure that things run right and are organized and we're being thoughtful as we address all these challenges out there. It's good to have such a great thinker on board, and we're really going to miss what she's brought to the division. So hopefully some of you will see her today and give her your thanks and congratulations. Another change that we've had is Alan Clark's moved upstairs to the Department of Natural Resources to serve as the watershed director. Mike Styler asked if he could come serve in that role. That's been a big position. Roy Reynolds has held that position at the department level, and he's actually going to come down, and for now we're going to have him sitting in a career mobility position as an assistant until we get those filled permanently. Alan is, everyone probably in this room and many of you who are listening to this remotely know Alan. I don't think we can say enough about all the commitment he has, all the knowledge and history that he brings in wildlife management, and he'll be missed, but I don't think he'll be gone too far. He's committed to continue to work closely with the division, and I think we'll still be seeing a lot of Alan around. So I think it's a new challenge and adventure for him, but I don't think he'll be lost from helping us manage wildlife. I think that's still where his heart is. He's still going to be around, so we wish him well in that endeavor and look forward to continue working with him. And please welcome Rory back to the division for now, at least while he's in this role. And, you know, that may work out for him down the road. But Rory's served as a regional supervisor in our southern region and been around the division many years, primarily in habitat roles, which he's so good at, and working with people in our communities. Last change we have up there, we've had a vacant deputy position in our director's office, and that's one that we're going to fill now. We've advertised for that, and I want to kind of explain what that role will serve. First of all, we've got some other positions that have come vacant that we're not going to fill, so we're not trying to grow positions or payroll around here in that manner or in other manners, but it's important that we look forward, and one of the challenges that I've personally observed while Jim's been the director and the last five directors that I've been able to work with are that we stretch the director so many different directions and serving on committees and commissions and attending meetings and things. I think sometimes that role's had a difficult time helping be involved and engaging and moving some of these visions forward that we collectively come up with. So what my hope is that we'll have this position that can really go out and make sure when we set out on a quest to help deer and do different sorts of things that I think are important to many of us, we've got somebody who's really staying on top of that. And rather than hoping that somewhere between all the various meetings and administrative duties that are being taken, time is being taken by our director and our assistants, that we really know we're moving forward. So we're not quite so reactionary. Sometimes I think in the wildlife world, we just wait for the next, you know, crazy thing to happen, and then we go chasing that. And I think we often, because of that, those busy moments, forget of the things we need to be doing to make sure our sportsmen and other wildlife enthusiasts know that we're out there, you know, doing good things. So that's what I hope to bring with that role. And I think that's going to have some positive results that we can report back to. Moving forward, a couple update items. First of all, a couple of these were mentioned yesterday in the work meeting. I think those minutes were recorded and will be available if others that are listening out there are interested in hearing on that work meeting we had yesterday. It was a very good meeting, and I appreciated getting to work so closely with the board members on that. Our coyote program, predator program that started up this year, through the 1st of December, we've had 2,351 coyotes checked in and paid out $117,550 in incentive payments. We're just now really getting into the coyote season heavy, and so we expect that number will shoot way up. And I think we're all hopeful that if with this program in place, you know, that we'll see some positive reaction on our deer herds over the next couple of years. Next item, and some of you may have been made aware of this on the news. I think Adam Eagle's television show has identified this, but the state of Wyoming is preparing to issue a mercury advisory on Flaming Gorge. We didn't quite see that coming, and Adam Eagle was made aware of that, and he does a good job reporting information that we need to know out there, and important stories. He maybe got a little bit ahead of where we were at on that, and we've not had a similar advisory issued in Utah. We're going to do some testing on our fish out there. The state has a mercury advisory team, and once we've done some more of our own sampling, you know, it's possible we could follow up with that. But at this point, we really don't want to conclude that some of the issues that were identified on the Wyoming side of Flaming Gorge are necessarily the same problems that are on the Utah side. And it only involves certain fish, lake trout and burbot and a couple species like that. It's not necessarily all the fish out there. And sometimes, is my understanding, the mercury may not necessarily, even in fish that do swim and move, may not, spread to vast areas of a waterway. So at this point, we're going to wait and see where we're at on Utah. But there has been a story, and there's been some questions on, well, is it safe to eat fish at Flaming Gorge anymore? And I guess we don't want to send the message until we know better. And we're going to do the testing and get those answers. But for now, we'll wait and see. We wrapped up recently a couple of exciting things in our southern region related to sheep. Teresa's here, Teresa Griffin, and I didn't ask her before, but I may have her come up and just tell us some of those successes we just did on the sheep transplants, or translocations, if you could do that for us, Teresa. And I know I'm kind of talking a lot today, but I'll try to be quiet in the future. But we haven't done a lot of sheep movements in recent years, and this is exciting, I think, for the sportsmen of the state. It's a good moment. Could you just give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, we went to Nevada at the beginning of November. We got 25 sheep from the Muddy Mountains just to the east of Henderson, and then we got 25 from the River Mountains. The rivers are right outside of Vegas, and then the Muddies right by the Valley of Fire. So we were able to bring 50 sheep back to Utah and put them on the Caparowitz East unit in two different locations.
Okay. Thank you. Before you scoot up there. So anyway, that's those are neat stories, and I think they've committed to hopefully get us some more sheep, haven't they, in the next couple of years. So those are really good supplemental. Go ahead.
Can I ask Teresa a question?
Sure.
Teresa, now I understand there's going to be two more years, theoretically, of this transplant and roughly 50 sheep each year.
I thought it was up to 100, but you may know more than I do.
Okay. Do you have any idea where those are going? I mean, some kind of plan?
I would hope to put them in one of the Caparowitz complexes, whether the East, West, or the Escalante. But we'll have to look and decide within the approved statewide plan what sites we have available to put those in.
Okay.
While she's still up there, one thing, we've just concluded some of our statewide flights on sheep. And one unit is we're kind of looking at some data that we're a bit concerned about. So our Escalante unit down there, one of them that Teresa just mentioned, we've seen a decline in that sheep population for about 6 or 7 years now. It's kind of getting to the point where it's maybe raised a little bit of an alarm that we continue that decline. We're looking closely at, some predation nexus maybe with cougars down in there, and it's possible that we may If we come to a conclusion that that's affecting significantly that herd, we may talk to Wildlife Services or some others about how we can go in and target a few cougars in there. That area is very remote. We don't get any cougar harvest back in that backcountry. We're 10 to 15 miles away from roads that a houndsman and things can get on. So we just don't have harvest in there. So that's an area that we're looking at potentially addressing. But, you know, we need to explore a few things. We need to make sure that also we don't have, you know, disease issues or habitat issues, which are difficult to address there and those types of areas. But what we don't want to do is see a herd that's been, you know, really a popular herd over the years, you know, fall off to a point where recovery is very difficult. So anyway, I wanted to make you aware we may take some actions there. Can you add anything to that, Teresa?
No, our biologist for the district, Dustin Scheibley, has been working on some different ideas to whether see if it's lions or maybe we can do some capture and blood work to see if we've got any disease issues underlying.
Okay. So. All right. Thank you. And I think our other sheep units around the state, you know, our two biggest, of course, are Southeast and Southern. Justin Shannon's here, and I don't know if we need an update. I think we've got some units that are holding in there, and maybe you could do a real quick update. I apologize to the board for taking so much time. They'll train me to go more quickly, but.
Fine. Yeah, we flew almost every desert unit in the Southeast region. We had three that were fairly concerned about, the Potash, the Lockhart, and the South San Juan. They were all lower than last year, and probably more scary is the low lamb TE ratios in those areas. We were optimistic about our Little Rockies herd by the Henry Mountains, and the Dirty Devil had a really good lamb TE ratio as well, even though that herd had been declining in years past. And so we're a little optimistic with that one as well. We flew the North Santa Fe unit additionally, and that one has been declining over the last decade. And our last survey, we saw about 80 sheep, and survey we saw just a little over 100, and the lamb to ewe ratios were doing better there. So it's hard to make sense of all that, but some units are struggling, and some we're optimistic about. So.
Question for you. So you feel like there might be a little bit of a bounce back on that? The North Santa Fe is the one I hear a lot about. A lot of guys spend a lot of time down there. I spend a lot of time down there. You just don't see the numbers that we seem like we've seen. Of course, we don't have access to the fancy helicopter that you do. So,
sure you do, John.
So. But you're feeling like that there is a little reason for optimism there after seeing the lamb counts and that this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think 3 or 4 years ago, I am. Generally, when you have disease, especially pastorella, come through a bighorn sheep population, the things that really are affected is your overall population, your survival of females, and your lamb to ewe ratios. And the lamb to ewe ratios are the most sensitive parameter with that. And so if those are rebounding, that has the potential for growth in the future, which is one thing that I focus the most on. So.
Thanks, Justin. So I think I'm about done, but I did want to mention, you know, as we just have talked about a few of these sheep issues for a moment, this isn't just an issue for the hunters out there. There are many others that enjoy those sheep populations. Last Saturday, December 1st, we had our sheep watching event. Dr. King, I think, attended that, right? So
yeah.
Could you give us a quick update? So I think you could do it better than I did, but I think it's so important. Many people enjoy these species out there.
Yeah, this is the the second year that I've taken students down there for that. And last year we had a nice day, but it was probably about 20 degrees, and the wind was blowing, and the sheep were all way up high on the side of the mountain right below the ledges. So we were watching them through spotting scopes largely, and this last Saturday they were all down right next to the road. So that was great for viewing. But there were, and I don't remember the numbers, but I'm guessing at least 85 or so people that went on that, more than double the number that were there last year. And lots of vehicles, a big train through the canyon there along the Green River, but it was great, and folks like Brent Stetler and Brad Crompton and Walt Maldonado and others there from the division did a great job getting that organized and keeping people moving along and informed as to where the sheep were. And I would commend those guys and the conservation outreach people in general. They do a great job with those kinds of programs, and appreciate the opportunity. And I know there were a lot of folks there in all kinds of vehicles. Some had massive four-wheel drives, and another guy was driving his Buick out through there. So it's accessible to most anybody to be able to go there. But it was a good day. So I think we saw about 60 sheep, a few nice rams, but it's a good day.
I think I've talked long enough. I'm going to get an elbow from the board chair here in a sec. So anyway, thank you all for welcoming me and your kind thoughts. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Director Sheehan.
Oh, yes.
Ernie, you had one.
Yeah. I picked up one comment on quaggas down in Lake Powell that really raised the hackles on my neck because of the potential implications on the state. And I got a little bit of information since then, but I thought it was worth sharing with the board members because they may get questions.
Okay, too. Yeah, I, that's a good thought. I apologize for not getting on there. That's part of my learning process that I'm going to go through here. But Drew, could you address that best for everyone? I know you're not our AIS guy, but I can't see everyone in the room. I don't know that Larry's here. But Drew Cushion, kind of our sport fish guy, but he could probably give
there,
a little bit of info.
There was a PCR finding, a DNA finding down by Antelope Point, which is just east of Waweep. Whatever's going on seems to be focused in that area. No adults have been found yet, so we don't know whether it was a ballast of a boat, whether there's enough to reproduce or actually mature, settle out and reproduce. We just don't know yet. And so we're going to follow up with additional testing from now till we determine what exactly is going on. They could disappear. They could actually, you know, because DNA means that there's something alive there. It could be a veliger. And once those mature and settle out, you know, there's a chance that they won't settle out in proximity close enough to one another to reproduce. And there's a chance they might. So we just have to wait and see what we know.
We'll keep our fingers crossed that there's really nothing going on there, but I think that's all we have for the moment on that. So we'll keep doing our testing down there. And we work with the Park Service is largely involved with that. So.
Hey, thank you, Director Sheehan. I, for one, am tickled pink to work with you. But I would also acknowledge that Director Karpowicz did a heck of a good job for the DWR, so. We're just continuing the evolution.
It only took me a year to run Karpowicz off, so we'll see how Greg holds up.
I bet you're gone before he's gone. Okay. Next item on is item number 5, our Bucks, Bulls, and Once in a Lifetime. And before we do that, just for particularly the board members, I want to bring up something I noticed as I reviewed the summary of motions from the different racks, and these motions only dealt with the CWMU and the landowner permits, but on both of those, the southeast region is listed twice, and the northeast region is not listed at all. So the second reference on both of those subjects should be the northeast region. And I went back to the northeast regions to check their minutes, and so that's just a little clerical thing, just so that when you're compiling your dots, that you understand who's voted for who. Okay, with that, Anise, you want to give us your presentation, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. I'm Anise Adi, the Big Game Coordinator, and I'll be presenting the Bucks and Bulls Once in a Lifetime season dates and any rule changes or boundary changes that will take place in the 2013 season. Start out with deer recommendations. Before I jump into this, I just want to kind of give you a quick summary of how the racks went. For the most part, it was a fairly smooth rack. Very few in attendance in a lot of the rack meetings. You know, having done this for the last 7 years, this tells me that it probably was a fairly successful deer hunt as far as it goes. Because usually when we don't have a successful deer hunt, we do see many of the publics come to our public meetings to show their, dissatisfaction with the hunt. So, and then having talked to a bunch of people that did show up at the meetings, that seemed to be the case. So overall, obviously not everyone is pleased with what we do, but the majority seem to be. Having said that, most of our general season season dates are not going to change a whole lot from last year. Basically, we just move them one day to account for the calendar year change and then move forward. So a lot of these recommendations I'll be making are not great, you know, big changes from what we saw last year. The archery season will continue to be a 28-day hunt that starts August 17th and ends September 13th. The muzzleloader will be a 9-day hunt that starts September 25th and ends October 3rd. And then the anti-weapon season will be a 9-day season that starts the 19th of October and ends on the 27th. Quickly move to our 2013 elk hunt recommendations for season dates. Again, similar dates from last year. The archery spike bull hunt will go from October 17th and end September 6th. Our spike hunt is shorter than our any bull hunt. The rationale for that is that those units overlap with the limited entry bull elk hunts, and to give those folks that drew the limited entry portion of that unit time to hunt without interference with spike hunters, we've cut the spike hunt short. And we did it on the latter end of the season because that is the time when it's closest to the rut. So those folks will get at least a weekend that's closest to the rut without having interference from spike hunters. The archery any bull hunt will be 28 days, just like the archery deer hunt, and will start on the same date, August 17th, and then the same date, September 13th. The any weapon season will be a 13-day season, as it always has been, and starts October 5th and ends on the 17th. The muzzleloader, a 9-day season, will start on the 30th of October and end on November 7th. And then the youth any bull season will be September 14th through the 22nd. And then there is, we've had the last few years, a late youth any bull season that's only in a small area in the northeast region on the Vernal's unit, where some bulls that primarily live on private land during the regular season are available for harvest later in the year, and this gives a few youth a chance at harvesting a nice bull in that area. That's a fairly long season, just because we can't depend on the weather moving those animals. We give them a longer period of time to just give them a more opportunity to harvest. So that hunt is a 47-day hunt, 11:30 to 1:15. You know, these are few permits. In the past, they've been 15 to 20 permits, so it's not a lot of harvest that takes place during that hunt. Okay, one of the statewide recommendations that we will be making at this board meeting is to allow youth to purchase unlimited over-the-counter general season deer permits. Basically, this would mean that those youth that may have put in through the drawing and did not draw a permit can go after the drawing is done, and this will probably be in the July time frame, purchase over-the-counter archery permit for any unit they choose in the state. You know, initially, when we floated this out there internally and to some groups, there was some hesitation of making this unlimited, just because when you say unlimited, you kind of see a large number. But we have had something similar to this 2 years ago, and we did it for 2 years, where we had 1,500 permits available for a very similar thing, where they could go hunt anywhere in the state. And we really only had about 450 or so people that actually participated in that youth. So we don't anticipate the number being in the thousands, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. And if it does get to that point, we certainly could put restrictions by unit on the number of youth. But at least initially, we would like to have it to be unlimited, because the easier you make it, the more likely you are to get youth involved. Once it becomes difficult with drawings and all kinds of things, you kind of start losing the youth. In any case, that's a recommendation we're making. That would be a change for more. And these would be permits that are on top of the whatever permits we recommend. Okay, some regional-based recommendations. The Southern Region's recommendation has two changes that deal with limited entry elk and any bull elk. Both of these changes are changes that were in the unit plans that went through the RAC and board. So these are pretty much have been approved already, but we're just making sure that they make it another step into the proclamation. So they're recommending changing the Fillmore Oak Creek South unit from limited entry to any bull. Again, this passed the Wildlife Board in the unit plans in May 2012. This unit has never been a very good limited entry unit and really fits our mold of what we call an any bull unit because of the private land issues and the agriculture and all of that goes along with it. Similarly, just to the south of that unit is the west side of the beaver unit. It has similar landscape, similar issues, and then that committee, when they put the unit plan at that time, decided to recommend that also become an any bull unit, and we are just moving that recommendation forward. So, again, this also passed the Wildlife Board in the unit plan revisions in May 2012, and we're just making sure it makes it into the proclamation or the guidebook. Southeastern region took advantage of this year to basically just clean up some boundary issues that they've had in the region. So there's a lot of them here, but really most of them are just to make sure that we're consistent in how we do things throughout different species. So they're recommending modifying the Henry Mountains deer, elk, and bighorn sheep hunt boundaries and the San Rafael South pronghorn boundary to exclude Capitol Reef National Park. Most of our boundaries currently include these national parks, but we say in the description that they're excluded, that you can't hunt in them because you cannot hunt on national parks.
So you're not just making it its own unit?
No, unfortunately. But basically, on this boundary, it barely goes into the park. It's just a road that drives through the edge of it. And it made sense. The park had asked us to do this, and it made sense to just make the boundary of the park the boundary of the unit. So it's not a major change. I think if you see it on your on the handouts you've gotten, it's not a major issue. Modify the Bookcliff South Bighorn Sheep Pronghorn Hunt boundary to match the deer boundary. Again, this is a slight modification. It used to be the Green River was the boundary. It's moved in about a quarter of a mile to the road that would make a better boundary. This excludes a lot of the agricultural land from the limited entry Bookcliffs unit, so we're not having to deal with depredation issues on a limited entry unit. Modify the Bookcliffs Bitter Creek South limited entry elk boundary to match the deer boundary. This is exactly the same change as in the one previous, and it's for similar issues. And then modify the 9 Mile Range Creek hunt boundary for pronghorn elk, bighorn sheep to match the changes on the Bookcliffs. Obviously, if you change a boundary, the adjoining unit has to match that change. And then modify the LaSalle Mountains and the San Juan Limited Entry Elk hunt boundaries to match the changes made for general season deer. This is just so we're consistent among species. The deer was changed last year when we went to unit by unit, and they're just making the elk match that. And then the last one for the Southeast region is to modify the LaSalle Potash Bighorn Sheep and the LaSalle South Cisco Pronghorn Hunt boundaries so they're the same. We have boundaries for those two species right now in the same area that overlap, but they don't overlap completely. This makes them overlap completely, so we have the same boundaries, and then the name will be the same as well. So we'll change the name of those hunts to include both of those names. Okay, some recommendations the Northern Region has made. To change the Pilot Mountains limited entry elk hunt boundary to include some private land where depredation is occurring. This is a win-win that landowner that will be incorporated now has agreed to allow some hunting on his property, so this will be good for the sportsman and good for keeping some of the elk off of his property. Add premium limited entry elk hunt on the Cache Meadowville unit to make it consistent statewide. The Cache Meadowville unit in the past hasn't had the premium hunt, and for those who don't know what a premium hunt is on the limited elk hunts, is basically allows you to hunt all the weapon types. It hasn't been available on the Cache Meadowville, and there are enough permits to allow it, so we're recommending changing that so we could have that hunt on that unit. Recommending adding a bighorn sheep hunt on the Pilot Mountains for 2013 per our agreement with Nevada. As many of you are aware, the Pilot Mountains straddle the Nevada-Utah border, and many of our hunts there, you can hunt both sides of that mountain range. In the past, we haven't had enough sheep on that unit to have a permit every year, so we've kind of gone back and forth. We would have a hunt one year, and Nevada would have a hunt another year. This year, there are enough sheep on that unit to actually have a permit on both Nevada and Utah, and both hunters will be able to hunt both sides. That population has been struggling. Even though we have had some mortality out there from disease issues, there is enough rams on that unit to allow for two permits. Allow harvest of either sex on the Ogden Extended Archery Deer Unit to be consistent statewide. Currently on the Wasatch Front Extended Archery Unit, we allow either sex mule deer hunting, and this just makes it consistent along that front. Clarify the boundary description to inform hunters that the posted area around the meadow and Hardware Ranch, WMA, is close to hunting. That area has always been close to hunting and is posted that way, but it's never been in our boundary description. We're just going to put it in there so people that do hunt on the cache unit realize that area is closed and be looking for those posted signs.
Denise, can I ask a question on the last one? How many acres would you say that meadow area, you know, around there that we're talking about is?
Oh.
So people have an understanding of what.
Yeah, so we're talking about maybe
100 acres.
150 acres.
I think that WMA is, what, 13,000
Yeah,
acres,
it's a huge WMA, so it only excludes hunting in the, you know, proximity of the elk feed row, basically, is what we're trying to protect. Yeah, and that's not a change from what we've done in the past. We've always posted that area around that for as non-hunting, and it's always been that way. When I was a biologist on that unit, we dealt with that quite a bit. It's just never been in writing, so this just makes it puts it into writing.
Thank you.
The Central Region recommending adding a late any weapon limited entry elk hunt on the Wasatch, Nebo, and Deep Creek units to reduce crowding. As you may know, on limited entry elk units, most of our limited entry elk units have an early and late rifle hunt. On these three units, we did have them initially, but then we showed that there were similar harvest success rates on the early and late. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of permits on these units, so we decided to just consolidate them all into the early. We are starting to have many more permits on these units, and it makes sense to reduce crowding to bring back that late hunt to basically move hunters from the early to the late hunt. Again, as I mentioned, success rates on that late hunt is going to be fairly high. There are some concerns out there that may be an issue, but it really I don't see it being an issue because we're going to harvest probably the same number of bulls and likely the same age classes that we would during the rut because, the rut hunt is really when they're the most vulnerable. And then they're recommending adding a premium limited entry elk hunt on the Deep Creek unit. This is similar to the Cache Meadowville hunt. It's one that hasn't had one in the past, but we do have enough permits there now to have that hunt, and we're recommending adding it. And then recommending adding a mountain goat hunt on the Nebo unit. This is something that's been a long time coming for our division. We've wanted to have mountain goats on the Nebo for a long time, and they are starting to be enough there to basically have a hunt. They flew that unit last year and basically found two major groups of goats, one on Loafer Mountain, WMA, which is a little bit south of Mount Nebo, and another pretty good-sized group on Mount Nebo itself. So there will be enough goats to issue some permits, hopefully from this point forward. And then the Central Region is recommending discontinuing the late doe only hunt on the Wasatch Front extended area to be consistent with the Ogden area. So the way it worked in the past is we had the either sex hunt on the Wasatch Front, and then when that ended, there was a 15-day period where you could hunt doe only, and it just extended the season. You know, we want to take that out and then make it consistent so that hunt ends the same on the Wasatch Front as it does on the Ogden.
So both sides of the road now have the same, if we pass this, we'll have the same either sex season.
Correct. Yeah.
Throughout.
Yeah. Which makes it simpler for those folks that are trying to navigate that, you know, whether they're north of I-80 or south of I-80. So.
Does that make it consistent statewide? Or
it... No, I'll have to go back and look. I think it's just the Wasatch Front portion. There may be some differences on other units as far as when the date ends. It is either sex on the Vernal subunit, but I'm not sure exactly what the dates are. I'll have to go look back and look. Key dates for the 2013 season. Big game drawing for Bucks Bulls, once in a lifetime, and new dedicated hunter applications. Basically, it's February 1st through March 4th. Application period for bonus points and application withdrawal period. When I took this out to the RACs, the end date was actually March 11th, but having had discussions with the licensing folks here since that time, they feel that it would be good to give folks another week to either get put in for bonus points or withdraw an application. So this has changed from what I presented to the RACs, but it actually gives the folks more time than, and we see no drawbacks to it. But so just I just wanted you to be aware that what we presented at the RACs was March 11th, but what we're presenting here is March 18th. And then the results should be posted by May 31st, 2013. Some other key dates is a lifetime license questionnaire, unit selection deadline. The lifetime license holders will automatically be assigned a unit that they had the previous year. Last year that was a little bit different because we had just migrated from regional hunting to unit-by-unit hunting. So we actually required them to tell us what unit they wanted to hunt. Now it's not required. They'll automatically get it. But if they do want to change it, they still can. But they have to get that change submitted to us by March 4th so they could change units. Those that didn't hunt in 2012 or failed to choose a unit by the deadline will just have to obtain one that's available after the drawing is done.
Anise, right there, when you're talking about giving them the right to change, that something coming to play with those on the 1,000 lakes we had this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we initially went to unit by unit, it was always our intent to still give a choice to the lifetime license holders, just because from our data it shows that they're fairly evenly distributed. So this just stays with that sentiment, and yeah, it gives those that may have chosen a unit that they, you know, thought was going to be better a chance to move around a little bit. You know, again, we always monitor these things. If we see one unit or another be overwhelmed by hunters, we can always change this in the future.
Thank you.
And then, so I think we're done with that. Okay, some key dates for 2013. Again, these didn't change. We just like to reiterate them every year. Shed antler and shed horn season dates. The online course and completion certificate are required if you're going to pick up shed antlers or horns from February 1st through April 15th. If you do it at any other time, you don't need that certificate. Dates when hunters may purchase or sell big game or its parts. If you're going to buy or sell antlers, heads, horns of legally taken big game, You can do that from February 15th through July 31st. I did get a question on that as far as taxidermy things and things like that that have already been processed. This is not, does not include those. If once something is taxidermied, it doesn't fall under that anymore. Untanned hides of legally taken big game may be bought or sold from August 1st through February 14th. Some disabled hunter general season hunt extension dates. These are dates that are afforded to those that apply for and gain a COR, having proven they're permanently disabled by giving us a doctor's note or something similar. Most of these are preseason, but there are some postseason extensions. So they get to hunt first on a lot of these. Archery deer, they get to hunt a preseason extension of August 12th through the 16th. The muzzleloader deer, it's September 20th through the 24th. The any weapon deer, it's October 14th through the 18th. And then the archery elk is the same as the archery deer, September 12th through the 16th. The muzzleloader any bull elk is November 18th through the 13th. That's a postseason extension. And then the any bull, any weapon elk is September 14th through the 22nd. And they can also hunt that small portion of the northeast region during that youth hunt extension as well. And then muzzleloader spike elk, November 11th through the 15th, and then the anti-weapon spike elk, October 18th through the 22nd. Again, these haven't changed from last year. We just moved them to adjust for the change in the calendar. That's my presentation. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Any question from members of the board? Ernie?
Anish, could we go back to that Capitol Reef in Henry Mountain? And
sure.
Is the park itself fenced or something so that hunters won't get into trouble if they go to the west side of the road there? How do they know that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's fenced. I'm assuming it's fenced, but and even if it wasn't fenced, in the past it was excluded as well. So it's not a change in that portion of it, but I'll have Justin maybe talk.
Yeah, good question. There isn't a fence there. It's essentially that ridge is the boundary. So
there's something that every hunter should reasonably be expected to recognize, and we're not.
No, there's no signage, and that's what made it difficult. Is you had the in the past, Capitol Reef was frustrated because hunters would drive up the park and. It, you know, for most of that unit, you could just hunt off the east side of that road, and so that's why we wanted to better define it. Just it was more of a working in a spirit of cooperation with the national parks. They had some concerns, and it was an easy change for us that we felt hunters could reasonably live by, because on that side, it's just a huge reef type cliff face. So that's essentially that boundary.
Justin?
Law enforcement guys are happy with it?
Yeah, our law enforcement and their law enforcement were satisfied with this.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and then just to clarify, even though this was a change in boundary description, it really didn't change from what it was before. Because before, it said that it excluded the national park.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Justin, in that area, or in a lot of the area around Capitol Reef, they have the little white poles that come up out of the ground like every 100 yards or whatever. Do they have that down through that area?
You know, I don't know. I've seen that down there, but I don't know if it's consistently defined around the entire park boundary. I've seen it, but I don't know if it encompasses this area. Sorry, Jake.
John?
And Justin, don't run off. I got a question for kind of both of you guys. And I've had a few guys ask me this the last couple of years, having to do with moose and the Wasatch and the Manti. It seems the last few years we're starting to see more moose on the north end of the Manti. Do we ever anticipate a real moose herd on the Manti? Is there any reason we couldn't budge the boundary down a little bit and just include those in the Wasatch?
I can take a shot at that. You know, that's always been an enigma to me, because you have an area like the North Manti, which we do have a few moose that are there. We see them in Huntington Canyon, and some of those are, Mike, I think you saw a moose on Gentry Mountain recently. And So they're there, it seems like a spot where moose would really take. But the head scratcher I have is they don't take there, and they all go to the 9 mile unit where it's drier, lower elevation. So I don't know. I'm still trying to understand that whole moose movement's complex. But
yeah. I mean, is there any reason we couldn't just slide the boundary down and include it with the Wasatch?
I don't think there is any reason. It's something we probably want to, you know, discuss internally and maybe try to bring something back next year. There aren't enough as
I don't anticipate a manti moose unit.
Yeah, and you know, I guess it never hurts to have a refuge in an area like that where they're right on the edge of being there or not, instead of going in there and maybe hunting them out. It doesn't hurt to have a population that isn't hunted, I guess, in those situations. So we would have to have some internal conversations about that and maybe come back with something.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Bill.
Regarding moose up in Mountain Green and that area in the northern region, some years ago we were trapping and moving some of those moose over to Colorado, and of late it seems like that herd seems to be down from what it had been at one time. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Actually, moose are struggling throughout the state, probably with the exception of the Wasatch unit. You know, we're starting a fairly involved study to look at what the reasons are. We have some speculations of what it may be, but we can't really pinpoint it because it could be different things in different areas. We have had declines, but it actually seems to be that they're starting to come back now. So, but probably in 2010 is probably when 2010 was probably when we hit the bottom of the trough and we're coming back up a little bit.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a number of questions, but I'd like them to defer those until after we hear the RAC comments. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. If nothing else, let's go to the RAC. Robert, do you want to start?
Could I ask a question first, a continuation? I'd ask you, Anise, at our meeting about the Lockhart bighorn sheep unit boundary overlap, the two deer units, and you were going to ask Justin about that, I think.
Yeah. Justin, you know what, I did not ask Justin. I do apologize for that. But maybe you could ask him, and hopefully not putting him on the...
No pressure.
I know it's a small unit, but it doesn't follow your rationale about separating units on deer unit boundaries.
Yeah.
The
Lockhart, the Potash, the San Juan, all that is a metapopulation. And what we've done is we've just managed, historically what those boundaries have been based on translocation or, you know, trying to get those populations established. And I haven't talked to Guy Wallace about changing those. I wouldn't suspect we would. I guess what would be the rationale for changing that? Just for consistency between other big game species?
Yeah, well, it's just that you were supposedly the rationale for a lot of these changes was that you were going to try to follow the unit boundaries for deer.
Right.
And so, but that Lockhart does overlap the LaSalle and the San Juan.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just its own unit, and there is some overlap because you do have it on both sides.
Yeah.
I haven't given it much thought, and I apologize for being ill-prepared, but are you getting at, would you like to see us...
I'd like to see the Lockhart bigger, but actually...
I'd like to see it bigger, too, more sheep, that is. But, we can talk about it. I don't have a good answer for you right now, though.
So.
I guess, looking at things statewide, there's often times when we can make things consistent, but there's often good reasons why we hunt things the way we do, because they are, sheep specifically, are tied to the habitat there, so... You don't want to make it a bigger unit where you can be harvesting from multiple populations. So there's rationale for everything, but if Justin will look at it and we can get back to you on that as well. And I do apologize for not following up. It was my dropping the ball.
Any other questions from the RAC chairs? No questions? Okay. Questions for the audience. And this is a question, not a comment. Is there anybody from the audience? Yes. Come and state your name and ask your question.
My name's Ken Strong. Anise, have you guys considered putting the backside of Maple Mountain, which is just across the highway on that Nebo goat herd? There's quite a herd of goats on the backside of Maple. Have you considered putting that in that unit? Or
that's actually, that actually belongs to the unit to the south of it. So it's already in a unit. And
to the north, isn't it?
To the north. I'm sorry. Yeah, to the north of it.
Oh, there's already a unit for hunting up there? Okay,
it is,
thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions from the audience? No other questions, then I'm going to go to the rack chairs and ask for their report for their specific rack. Can we start with you, Steve, from the Southern Region?
Sure. We had a lengthy and lively discussion, and to cut to the chase, we had a motion to accept as recommended with the qualification that these youth permits, archery permits, be limited to 100 per unit. That passed 6-3 with one abstention. And an amendment that passed unanimously was to ask the board to accept an action log item to consider the west side of I-15, that portion of the beaver deer unit west of I-15, be considered as its own limited entry deer unit.
Steve, does that have a name, that actual?
It'd be the mineral range, essentially.
The mineral range, the mineral mountains
there. It takes a little more in than that to the south, but it's essentially the mineral mountain range. And briefly, some of the discussion about that. The last two go-arounds of the elk management plan revision, the decision has been to try to feature mule deer there rather than elk. That's why you see the recommendation about any bull hunting on that mineral range. I-15's fenced. Most of the damage on private land is because of the limited summer range out there, and those elk are now cut off. And a lot of folks have talked about the potential for limited entry deer there. And with the deer management plan revisions coming up probably next year, it might be timely to consider this then.
Let me just ask you, I'm not looking at a map, but lived in Cedar for 10 years. When you say the mineral range, that's the high mountains are just the west of Minersville Reservoir. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. But it continues south almost to Enoch.
Almost to Enoch.
Minersville Highway comes in back into I-15. Yeah. And it goes north of the Black Rock Road at Cove Ford.
Okay, that's a pretty big area.
Quite a few deer out there.
Some good deer out there. At least there sure was. That's a good idea. I like that. Okay, Darius from the Southeast Region.
Southeast Region. Motion was made to accept the division's recommendation as presented and passed with one dissenting vote.
Okay. Thank you, Floyd from the Central Region. Or Fred, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had two motions in the Central Region. First motion was to ask the Wildlife Board to establish an action log item for the division to investigate additional muzzleloader pronghorn hunting opportunities in the state. That passed unanimously. And then we had a second motion to accept the division's recommendations as presented, and that passed unanimously.
Okay. Boyd for the Northeast Region.
Mr. Chairman, we had three motions that all passed unanimously under this action item. The first one was to accept the division's recommendations as presented. Then the second one involved the youth unlimited over-the-counter archery. The motion was to require all youth that get these permits to take an archery ethics course. This would be a requirement, and that motion passed, as I said, unanimously. The third motion was brought by a member of our public to the RAC. His name was Lance Hadlock, and he sent us, and I believe you all have a write-up of what his recommendations were, but in just it would be to make all of the deer units in the state, one deer unit, that there wouldn't be a premium, a limited entry, and or a general deer hunt unit, that it would be just a deer hunt unit. That would be similar to the 30, but it wouldn't be identified as a premium, and people would draw for those units.
Same kind of setup as Colorado?
Yes. That's what he claimed, yes. And so, and that passed also unanimously to take a look at and present to the Wildlife Board.
Thank you.
I for one, don't think I've got that.
I'm not sure.
I sent it in. It looks like that.
You can view it now in your Dropbox.
Okay. I happened to be in Kansas for 5 days last week hunting with Lance. I have an idea. I read it, and we spent lots of hours talking.
So it was just a thought, an idea that he wanted to bring up and ask the RAC to consider it, and the RAC did and recommended that it move on to the Wildlife Board for consideration.
Okay. Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had two motions on this agenda item that both passed unanimously. The first motion is to recommend the Wildlife Board establish an action log item to study additional muzzleloader pronghorn hunting opportunity as presented by Mr. Wynn Zundell. Second motion was to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the Bucks, Bulls, and Once in a Lifetime 2013 season dates and application timeline as presented.
Okay, thank you. Now we go into comments from the audience. I have one card. If there's any audience, we don't have a lot, but if there are any of you that want to make a comment, you'll need to fill out one of these. If you're representing yourself, you'll give you 3 minutes. Our clock's not working, so one of us here is going to watch you closely. But if you're representing an organization, you have 5 minutes. The only one I have at this point in time is Ben Louder. Ben, if you want to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ben Louder. I'm here representing the Utah Bowman's Association today. First of all, I'd like to thank the board for this opportunity and to talk to you today and address you guys and also for your service. I know that it's a sacrifice that you guys make to be here. The Utah Bowman's Association would like to applaud the division for their recommendation on the youth archery tags that they that program that they presented today. We feel that that's a great program. As Anise said, it's similar to a program that we've had in the past that we haven't seen a huge number of youth participating in, but we have seen some. I think Anise said about 450 or so. We feel that's a great opportunity for youth to get involved in the sport. Especially where we've gone to the multiple units now and has become more difficult for youth to get a tag. This provides youth with an opportunity to hunt if they don't draw a tag in the general draw. And we are in favor of this, and we recommend that this board approve that recommendation as well. Thank you.
Ben, can I ask you a question? Just absolutely. While we're talking youth archery, what do you have a feeling or an opinion on this youth archery ethics course from the Northeast region?
You know, I was just thinking about that as that was mentioned. You know, obviously youth are required to take hunter safety. These tags are for general season, so we're talking about requiring youth to take this if they buy one of these additional tags, but not if they just draw a tag in the general draw. So I don't know that I see it as necessary, but I'm not opposed to it either. So indifferent, I guess.
Okay, thank you. No other comments from the audience? Jake, the rack's done. Sorry.
Okay, I've got a number of questions here I'd like to ask, and maybe the first one to get out of the way would be to discuss the unit that is west of the Beaver. I was wondering whether then to put that item on the action log is if we should just send it to Anis and ask him to make sure he discusses it at the mule deer when you redo your five-year plan, which will be sometime down the road, probably within the next 2 years.
Yeah, that would certainly be appropriate. I mean, we always discuss those type of things when we redo the plan. So
didn't we? I mean, last year we talked about a premium deer hunt on these units, and we kind of sent that same direction. So kind of go along with this. I mean, I would think that would be something that we just, you know, that's my opinion. That's where that would fit right in, is just send it to the Deer Management Committee.
Iterate kind of the same thought. This is kind of getting the cart before the horse to ask the Wildlife Board to ask the people that are building the unit plans to look at this one when it should be going to them first. And I think both SFW and the RAC automatically will be represented on the deer committees down there. And then if the committee endorses it, then it'll come back to the board.
Right. Yeah, and I guess, you know, just to weigh in a little bit on this, it never hurts to have a reminder on the action log that we need to. It's something we need to look at internally before we go forward and ask the public to weigh in on it. Because we're going to have some input on it as well as a division.
Yeah, I think what scares me there is if we start getting inputs on every unit from people that are looking things on unit management plans, that action log is going to turn into a small book.
Sure.
And I think they're already automatically guaranteed a seat on the committee.
All I'd add to that is it formalizes that process so that the division gets to the table with the correct data at hand to have that discussion, because it's going to take pouring over harvest data and changes. What's this going to do to change in opportunity and the big picture, just so it's not overlooked. And maybe the action log's not the answer. Maybe there's another process, but that help?
Let me say one thing, and I agree with Anise and with Steve both, and no offense, Ernie, but Ernie and I had a discussion earlier when we first came on this board that action log was a lot longer than it is now. So we'll down. I like the idea of having it up front and center in front of my face so that I can remember what I need to do to check on it. I personally like the idea, and it can come off, but it's just going to be on a sheet of paper so that nobody overlooks it.
Well, it really doesn't matter to me which way it goes as long as it gets looked at down the road. My only thinking was is the same as Ernie's. Every time something comes up, do we throw it back on, or is there something that's a year away that those guys should be looking at anyway? So.
I don't know that. I mean, it came to the RAC. Those that were interested in it brought it to the RAC. The chairman's presenting it to the board, and I think if the board, you know, if we decide to put it on the action log or something, I think it's gone through the process just like it's meant to do up to this point. And if we decide to put it on the action log or something like that to make sure it's not forgotten, or just make a recommendation back to the division, I don't think we're out of line either way there, because I think it's gone through the process pretty straightforward up to this point.
I think they also...
So if we made a motion to have Anise study the impacts of the Mineral Mountain Range going to a limited entry unit to be discussed at the mule deer, what am I trying to say there, committees?
The committee,
With the management committee.
The statewide plan.
Mule deer management plan.
Well, let me...
Okay with that.
I'm just going to add to it. You know, a year from now, we're going to have two new members on this board. Ernie and myself will be gone. I think it's very helpful to have these things on that log so any new guy coming on can see some of the things that's taken place and what we're asking for. Otherwise, they don't have a clue. No offense to them, but I think it's the place is the action log. That's the purpose of the action log, is to compile ideas.
I think it's very important that, you know, that we listen to the public and go through that process, but at the same time, we shouldn't overwhelm the division with everything that comes along. But I think this one is really important, and I'll make a motion that we put this on the action log, the Mineral Mountain Range, to be discussed at the mule deer plan and have a presentation ready for that at that time.
A motion has been made. A second?
Second.
John seconded. All in favor?
I just have one quick question.
Cal?
Is that going to, you know, we've discussed this now, is that going to open the floodgates that everybody that wants to change a little bit here or there, or is this, that would be my only concern. Are we going to start splitting hairs and start splitting things up?
I think
just because a couple of people think this ought to be a limited entry.
I think the floodgates have been open for years now.
Yeah, I would
this
agree.
Is just this is just
concern.
Another wave in the river, man.
Yeah. And I don't maybe
I think this would do, which would be outside of what we already do as
okay
as normal.
I
basis.
Guess there's an ongoing. I guess you look at all the units and adjust accordingly as they need to be adjusted.
Well, we don't. We won't adjust them ourselves. Obviously, all things we do require quite a bit of public involvement. So this will all be brought up to the committee. The committee may not take it up.
They may say, hey, it's not worth the effort. Or
It just depends where it goes. It may go one way or the other.
And if they think it does, then it goes back out to the public for those people who
exactly.
don't want to change it.
So it's a fairly rigorous process. It's not like if you guys are acting on it now, this doesn't mean that it's going
to doesn't mean it's an automatic, we're going to change it and redraw the lines.
Right.
It just gives you the heads up to start looking at it.
Exactly.
In addition to what you're already looking at.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
And there's nothing wrong with that, is there, Anise?
Oh,
and I think, do you want to restate that motion again?
We put the Mineral Mountain Range, which is west of Beaver, on the action log to be discussed as a limited entry unit at the mule deer management plan.
Yeah, management plan.
Unit plan or whatever.
Okay, that's what I'll make sure. So it's. We got a timetable there, and that's when that mule deer plan comes up.
Right.
Okay, it's been made by Jake, seconded by John. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you, Steve.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a few more questions, if I could.
You got them.
Okay. Going back to the Southern Region's vote on archery tags over the counter, my first question is, what is the division's definition of a youth?
It's 18 and under. They have to... Is that roughly it? Yeah. But that for most big game hunting, at least what we consider a youth for applying and all that for those big game hunts, it's 18 and under.
Okay.
That's what we would consider for this.
Under 18 or 18 and
I think
under?
They can turn 18 by the start of the hunt.
So they could be 18 years old and be considered as a youth.
Right.
Okay.
For 1 year only.
How many archery tags went unsold last year?
I think any went unsold.
Didn't we keep
how
500
many what? Sorry?
Archery tags.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think any went unsold. We rolled some over.
Right, but my question is how many went through the archery process that did not go unsold?
I don't know if I
have. You remember, Judy, on that, what we... Well, yeah, before the muzzleloader began, we rolled those over. I'm just guessing, but I want to say maybe 800 or something. No, I don't think it was that high, was it?
Okay. But we did have
get
some
that from Kenny,
right.
Judy,
on
so
three
we can
units.
Answer that.
So this wasn't on a statewide basis.
And that was my next question. What was those units?
I think it was the Box Elder, the Cache, and the Camas.
I think Ogden and Camas both had some.
They're
Judy's going to go grab that, so and we'll give you the exact numbers here in just a second.
And these are units we expected to go undersold, and that's why we put in that provision for rolling permits over because.
Okay. When we when we brought this presentation forward, was there any discussion of maybe some of what the adverse effects of allowing more youth on some of these units would be on that particular unit, like ATV use and things like that?
We certainly discussed it internally as far as what would be the, I mean, we're talking, 500 additional hunters, be they youth or otherwise. It's not really spread out over 30 units. It's not going to be a ton of impact.
That's what you're projecting. But
right.
One other question, and I don't know whether it was discussed internally or not, but did you discuss whether these youths have to apply beforehand?
We did not. We're not requiring them to. And I'll tell you our rationale. We did discuss it, obviously. The rationale for that is to try to get youth involved in hunting. A lot of the research says make it as easy as possible. And if we require them to do X, Y, and Z before they do this, it's just making them jump through a lot of hoops that may not be needed. We could put this out there, and if for some reason it becomes something that is a drain on the resource, we certainly can limit it or get rid of it. Our projections right now is it's not going to be an issue, but that's the rationale. We didn't make them apply first, and then it just makes it a lot more difficult, not only for the youth, but for us to administer as well.
Okay, so if I'm a youth applying for an archery permit through the internet and over the counter, are the fees the same?
The permit fee will be the same, but you'll have to pay $10 application fee to
both ways.
No.
So does the division lose money that way?
I couldn't say. I guess I imagine we'll still have the same number of people applying through the drawing, because most youth hunters are not archery hunters, and then if they don't draw any weapon tag, they may try to take up archery.
And how many permits do we have under the any weapon for youth there?
It's around for youth. Mm-hmm. So it's around 50,000, so 20% of that, 10,000.
Probably a little higher than that, because some youth draw their permits after the first round of youth drawing or with a group of parents, so I'm guessing it would be maybe more like 15,000.
Right,
so.
But the set-asides are probably 10,000, and then, we do have a lot of youth that draw outside of that as well.
When I look at, and I'm not against youth hunting because I have a grandson come up and I've already got him an archery tackle and whatnot and working on that. But at the same time, and we've seen this, with our RAC members in the southern region, see it looking at, you guys gave us yesterday on some of the other issues, is we had archery tags left over in three parts of the state of Utah. And when it comes to this point, I think down around St. George, where you have a large population, and Cedar City, that you're going to see some impacts on the Pine Valley and probably Panguitch Lake. And it's not only from maybe too many youth hunting there, but they also bring, they bring their families and they bring their four-wheelers, and it also turns into some adverse effects on the Fish Lake or some of the other units. We've seen that up around UM and above Loa and Fremont there. And it's not just the archery, it's the rifle hunters, and it's part of the entertainment. But there is some adverse effects, and it is going to impact the southern region. Rather than being any that you can buy over the counter, why, myself personally, I'm in favor of what the southern region voted in down there to have at least a minimum free. Or sometime in the future have a percentage, not just a
that. I, you know.
So you're saying you agree with the Southern that you want to limit so many of those open over-the-counter archery tags?
What I personally would like is to actually wait a year and let it go back to the mule deer management plan. Let Anise and them study and see if there isn't a way that they could come up with a percentage of these to be distributed throughout the state, so it's kind of an equal thing and we're not impacting.
They don't all bunch up in one spot.
And I'm not saying they will or they won't. It's all, I sent you guys a copy of a letter from a gentleman in southern Utah who was really concerned, and it's kind of a guess, but I don't want it to be an adverse effect on people who are out there hunting either. So,
Ernie?
They have something that would satisfy the Southern Region RAC and Jake's concerns, and at the same time would get this going, because I do think it's a youth recruitment thing and an opportunity thing. Southern Region RAC voted for 3,000 tags at 100 per unit for 30 units. That translates to about 3.5% of the statewide tags. What I don't like about the 100 tags per unit is that an arbitrary number applied to all units around the state doesn't make any sense to me at all. Take, for example, the Southwest or Plateau Thousand Lakes, which has got 400 tags, putting another 100 tags on top of that wouldn't pass. So I think you need to have some tiers on unit size with the thing, but maybe we could do that and satisfy the request for some limits, at least for the first year. So I would propose that for 2012 only, we don't address 2013, give the division a limit, matches kind of what the Southern RAC asked for, at the same time goes well above the projection of 400 or 500 tags that the division's got. Maybe doing something like 50 permits on units that have 1,000 or less total tags, 100 permits on units between 1,000 and 3,000 tags, and 3.5% on units over 3,000. That would set that cap up, Jake, and for the Southern RAC, and would still give room for it to happen right now with some caps on it, and we get the thing started.
I guess you may... There's a lot simpler way than just to have a straight percentage, which would get to what you're trying to get at without having to have everything spelled out. And if we went with what the Southern Region already would like to see and translated that into a percentage, it would be about 20% in addition. So 3,000 permits, over 16,000 archery permits, roughly it's almost 20%. So if we just did a 20% cap on each unit, that would be a much simpler way to approach it.
Archery tags is
right.
The base.
Okay. Yeah. Again, you know, this is a proposal that you know, we thought through quite a bit internally. We used past data that we've had. We have had 1,500 permits available for 2 years where they could hunt anywhere in the state, and we've only had 450 people take advantage of that, 450 youth. So we don't anticipate thousands and thousands of people.
But I see if you don't make them apply,
yeah,
and they know they can go buy one.
They didn't have to apply before either for the Southern Region or any other region. So
I know, but it's changed. You know, now that we've gone to the units by units, I see that with our internet, you know, where this could spread, and the people will say, well, if you're 18 and under, don't apply, and then they'll give your dad and everybody else a better chance of drawing. And then they go and buy an unlimited amount over the over the counter. The other thing I don't like about that is you know, if the people who are applying, they're paying a fee. But then we turn around and give you a discount for buying them over the counter, and I think it ought to be what's good for one is good for all.
Denise, ask you a question. If we take these, if the kids know they don't have to apply, the parents know they don't have to apply, and they can buy them over the counter, so they don't, wouldn't we be that way opening up slots in the drawing for adults that could, let me make this very clear, I don't think that we have enough archery hunters in the state to affect the deer herd, but we would be putting more effective hunters in those slots, possibly, if we.
But there's no evidence that youth hunters are any more or any less efficient at killing things. So I don't think whether you have an adult hunter or whether you have a youth hunter.
So what if we just say if you're under this age, if you fit within the age class, you're guaranteed a permit, but you have to apply for it?
Yeah, that's another approach. I'm not sure. Again, there's different iterations of this. Sure. The licensing will have to work through.
I don't disagree with Jake on very much. Me and Jake have a lot the same train of thought. Must be the central Utah roots or something. But when it comes to this archery thing, I have no problem selling archery tags to kids. I think it's a great way. Archery is something kids can do all year round besides hunting season that keeps them involved, you know, with the culture of hunting,
right,
and with tradition and whatnot. And anything we can do to keep those kids involved, I think, is good. I don't think you're going to have, especially the kids, I think, you know, that age class of kids just learning and stuff, I don't think they're going to have an effect.
To the rationale why we made it after the fact instead of during the drawing is, say, Dad drew this tag and now wants to take Junior along. They could just go buy it. But if they put in, you know, one may draw, one may not, and so on and so forth. There's so many complications. This just makes it very simple. So, anyway, we could do it any way you would like. You know, if we are going to go to limiting, I would rather see the percentage than 100 per unit, just because some units can support 100, some units cannot. So
that way it just stays
well. And you take certain parts of the state, like the Thousand Lake unit, you're not going to see 100 tags on there because there's not 100 people over there that'll go hunt it.
Right.
And they're not going to travel from Salt Lake. But on the same token, Cedar City and St. George, like I discussed with the high population, you will see some impacts on that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, and, you know, maybe I'm too far to the right, I don't know, but 18-year-old people are allowed to go into the Army. They're allowed to go on missions. You know, they're considered an adult. Should we be looking at actually the definition of a youth is, again, maybe as a division?
I mean, we're open to any suggestions.
We've heard that comment before, and I think that's something we need to look at. We have a variety of different youth definitions for some of our special hunts we do for upland, and I don't, maybe it's Ernie I've talked to before, but someone's brought this up before. How many definitions do we have for youth in this state? So that's something we probably do need to look at a little bit more.
See Judy Tutoro in the back there, shaking her head and saying she doesn't have enough time left before she retires to get a approval of a definition of a youth in the state, I think.
She is not going to retire because then nobody could keep her offspring in line. Not in the plan, Judy.
Okay. I want to keep us moving forward.
I'd sure like to see this happen, and I'm more concerned that it happened, even if it's just a this is what we're going to do in 2012, then kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
Well, and we also need to keep in mind that every region voted to approve it with some modifications in the southern region. And even if we have to modify it, I'd rather see it modified than not.
But every region had deer tags left over, too.
Only one region had deer tags left over.
Because they're not going to be impacted.
Yeah, I would love to see this happen is all I'm saying is because it is an opportunity. But however, it needs to be modified.
I would too, but I think you need some restraints on it some way.
I agree with you.
Okay, Jake, I want a motion.
I'll try one first, and I probably won't get a second. But I'm going to make a motion that we send this back to the Mule Deer Committee for consideration under their five-year plan.
Have a second?
You know, I love you, brother, but I can't go that way.
And just a point of clarification, this isn't the kind of thing we would discuss at the Mule Deer, because Mule Deer Plan deals with, you know, more, we don't really deal with specific how youth hunting issues and those things. We try to figure out what unit should be this, what unit should be that. So even though we may discuss it, it's something that can be fluid and changed, you know, without having to go through a five-year plan. So
I'm just going to speak off the record. You know, when I was 16 and 17, living in Salt Lake County, I drove to UM Creek every year to hunt archery. I know where UM Creek is. I've been there as my favorite spot for hunting with the bow and arrow. Of course, the population is greater than it was there. But, you know, it'd take three or four trailers and there are probably 150 people right there at the head of UM Creek. It wasn't a problem. We all had fun. I can understand the southern region's concern because, yeah, they got the Serengeti of Utah. And they want to keep the Serengeti. And I don't blame them for that. So if I had a recommendation just to get this thing moving forward, because I didn't want to take all day on this subject, I would like to see a percentage thrown out that we do this year and this year only, and so we can handle it. I like the idea of the board addressing the public's comments in the RAC and those motions made rather than kick it down the road, so I want to see the board do something.
And when we say a percentage, something that would accomplish what we want to accomplish but still work as a safety net.
Yeah.
To kind of address Jake's concerns and make sure we don't have a flood in one area. Right, until we can see what's going to happen, and then we can kind of go from there.
And that's why I said if we want to go that route, I would rather see a percentage.
A percentage rather than the hard number.
Right, because a hard number doesn't – one size doesn't fit all.
Jake, is that going to make your constituency down there – feel like we paid attention to them?
Well, you know, there's a couple things that I don't like is, and it's not that I disagree with Anise on a lot of things, but I don't like if it doesn't work, we can change it down the road. Me, I would rather see those things be studied and brought out in a whatever that percentage works, rather than just come in and say, well, we'd like to sell X amount over the counter or not, because the impacts on Monroe Mountain are going to be a lot greater than what they are on some of the rougher country because of the terrain, and they're able to get up and down the road, and we're barely getting it out of a 12 to 13 buck unit, and we've had that effects on the Fish Lake and on the Boulder also, and it's because of the access. Now that we've gone to unit by unit, we've kind of controlled the amount of numbers that can go in there, and you can fix that problem. All I'm saying is a year later, we're going to throw more tags out there on some of these units that actually need help.
Okay. And I think we either need to pick a percentage and move forward, or we need to accept it as presented and overlook in the Southern's request of a limit on there, and I gun shy about that because I respect what the Southern RAC has gone through to get to where they've done. Well, they have.
Can I ask the chairman of the Southern region, just, I mean, having been in the meeting and taking the comment, and what's your, as far as the percentage goes, how do you think that's...
It was an interesting debate. We had one member of the of the public that usually comments in the name of United Wildlife Cooperative proposed statewide archery again. There are those who think there's additional opportunity, but honestly, those who are most vociferous and several members on the RAC bring up valid points about crowding issues, perceived or otherwise, and hey, we've taken all these steps to 30 units and stratify everybody's had to sacrifice, and are we really ready to jump back in the pool like this yet? People are apprehensive, you know. It took a lot of time on everyone's part to get where we're at, and people don't want to go backwards. So I think it's that simple.
But does the percentage address what they
people
asked
struggled
for?
They struggled with that motion that night. Did 100 sound fine? We didn't want to keep beating it around, and that's why it was 6-3. You know, I guess we can live with something like that, but at least they felt like we're capping it.
And the guy who made the motion, he knows for a fact that the places that some aren't going to get 10, take a beaver, it might get 200 or 300, you know.
Exactly.
They all know that. But somehow they had to get through the meeting, and I applaud them for what they did. But.
Well, Anish, you threw out a figure of 20%. You have the archery, yeah.
That's correct. That would get us around the same number that the Southern region wanted.
Anish, do you have those numbers that Jay could ask about?
Which Judy brought in?
How many weren't sold through the draws, so we have a sense of that?
So there was 360 in the box elder unit, 245 in the cash unit. I think those were the only units where we transferred. I don't have the numbers where we transferred archery to muzzleloader. This is just from muzzleloader to.
Oh, we don't have the archery left.
That's what was left of the archery unit. Right, that's what was left of the archery. Okay, yeah. So 360 and 245, those two units.
All right, so whatever that is, 600 or something.
See, I had the right number. I just had too many zeros.
600 and change.
So 20% would put us close to the numbers we've had, would put us close to
3,000 total.
Close to what we anticipate would the Southern region voted for as far as capping the numbers on their.
I doubt we'll
and would kind of provide a safety net against like massive migration one way or another. Give us a good opportunity to look and see what's going on. You ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I'm ready for a motion.
I'd make a motion that we allow 20%.
Okay,
right?
We're just motioning on the archery.
Yeah.
All right.
That on the for the youth. Over-the-counter archery hunts, 20% of the number of the permits on each unit be allowed to be sold
over-the-counter. Number of archery permits.
Number of archery permits be allowed to be sold over-the-counter to youth. Does that make sense to everybody?
Is that going to be hard to keep track of?
No, I've already checked with licensing on that part. Of it, anticipating something like this might occur.
Okay. The motion has been made by John and seconded by Ernie that we put a 20% cap on the youth archery permits per unit. All in favor? All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. 1, 2, 5, 4, and 1 against. Appreciate your...
Mr. Chairman, let me just say, the more we talk about this, the more I can see where Jake's coming from and the concerns of the people in the South, and I appreciate the work they did in the RAC meeting to kind of flesh this out a little further. I think really helped us here be able to come to a compromise, not exactly what they wanted, but address their concerns, and, you know, hopefully a year from now we'll have a better idea and be able to move forward.
I got one clarification to make, John. Your motion was that for 2012.
Yes, for 1 year.
For one year. Yeah. So this is not in perpetuity.
It will be for the 2013 hunting season. We're in 20. Yeah.
And Jake, we appreciate your effort, support, and your constituents. That's why you're here. Thank you, and Steve also.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make another motion that we ask the division to put on the action log to look at going in and looking actually what the definition of a youth is and seeing if we need to reduce the from 18 years back to 16 or 17 and spend some time on that and get back with us a later date.
And consolidate that across the board.
Yeah, make that universal across the board, that definition.
Is that youth upland? Is that youth fishing? Is that youth,
just
you know, yeah, I agree.
That's the thing. We have so many out there. I think we need to look at what is, because I think 18 is too old for youth now, especially with what they've got going in the world. But
I'll second your motion.
I'd like to amend that motion to request that the division appoint Ms. Judy Tutoro in charge of that committee and effort, and that she can't retire until the board is adopted.
That's done.
You're usurping Greg's authority there, you know, so I would reject that.
That's a policy statement, isn't it? Not a...
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded that we...
Crandall was.
...put on the action log a request that the DWR go back and redefine youth or come up with their best efforts so that we can consolidate and have a good idea. And that's across the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask one more question?
Do you want the answer?
And I'd like to ask the director this, if I could. Over-the-counter permits, are they always just sold as what the permit value is?
Versus the draw? Yeah. Yeah, I can't think of any exception when that wouldn't be the case, other than the application fee. But yeah, we don't have a tiered pricing that they would change in price from the draw to the over the
counter. That way?
A huge amount of leftover permits.
Over the counters?
Not too many nowadays, no. Mostly cow elk would be the probably volume wise that we sell quite a few.
The elk are all, the general season elk are all over the counter.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody need a break?
Yeah.
Okay.
How close are we to passing this along?
We got four more racks to go, Steve. That took quite a while. Darius, you ready? We're going to run through this the best we can.
The racks already made there.
Already went.
Well,
we're good.
Can I
just say, before we make a motion to deal with the balance here on the Wasatch Lake unit, I got beat up on this pretty good. I have definitely some strong personal opinions on the late hunt for the elk on the Wasatch. However, there appears to be all those people that got a hold of me and chewed my ear, nobody wanted to come to the rack meeting and nobody wanted to come to the board meeting and make an issue of it. So I don't feel it would be right for me to push that issue, having no vote on it from the rack and no representation here at the board. So I know some of them are listening to this. If you want something pushed, you got to help me out. So I feel like... it would be highly inappropriate for me to push that, having no vote and no representation here. So I know Anish, you and me talked about that, but Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
No? Okay. You want me to keep talking while you and Dale work it out, or are we all right?
We're trying to consolidate here.
Okay.
Sure. Yes.
Yes, we do, don't we?
Okay, we've got an item from the Central Rack and the Northern Rack asking for an action log item to the division to study additional muzzleloader pronghorn hunting opportunity. The division has already agreed to do that, so we're just putting it on the log and that we add that to the action.
Seconded by John. a motion to add to the action log an item to have the DWR review muzzleloader for pronghorn. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you. You got one more there, Ernie?
Yeah.
Lance Hadlock?
Northeast region had Mr. Lance Hadlock for items to be brought to the wildlife board. And
talk to your mic.
At that for the very first time, but those are major changes to huge changes to how we're doing everything. I think that would be appropriate to refer to the Mule Deer Committee when it meets again for individual consideration of the multiple different proposals in there.
You know,
and would come back through the racks in that manner.
You know, the way that would work, too, if you're looking at Colorado's model, their bonus point structure is different. I mean, you can apply for a very high-end tag and then draw your second and still accrue bonus points, which deals with some of the things we talked about yesterday in great length. So that is a major change.
So I would propose that we defer on that one, that those go to the Mule Deer Committee, you know, through the RAC representative or through the regional.
And let me just add that to Lance. You know, I mentioned like I spent the last week with Lance out in Kansas hunting, and he had that, and we read it several times, and we talked. I think it helps when you see a bigger picture, and it's helped him, and it's helped me. I don't think he's maybe some of those things he'd probably change as to what's on that list now after having spent several days, but I agree with Ernie's motion that we just wait until we get that, because that's huge. You know, he was convinced that it would not change the draw odds. I'm convinced the opposite. And I think now he's seen a little bit more like most of us. So let's just wait for that.
And I'd just like to say, I think that will, just remembering the last Mule Deer Committee, that will be discussed. I mean, those kind of things, that will be discussed. If we didn't say anything, I think that will be discussed.
I would agree, because it comes up every time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last one I see here is there was a recommendation from the Northeast RAC that a archery ethics course be required on these youth hunters, and then the discussion here expanded even beyond that. I'd like to ask the division for comment on both the specific recommendation here and other thoughts too, and is this something that could be looked at in the future, expansion of what the archery ethics class looks or applies to?
Well, have a similar thing, which is if you want to hunt the extended archery hunt, we have sort of a online, largely ethics course now. So we make sure people are aware of, you know, hunting near homes and different things, some of that sensitivity. It wouldn't be as difficult to have youth do something like that. If we wanted to expand our sort of archery classroom type. We have that now, I believe, don't we, Mike, is on a limited basis, but it's not mandatory to hunt archery. I think that might be a pretty big jump to do statewide, to find instructors and training times and all of that. I support whenever we can have that classroom education, but I guess if you felt strongly about it, something online might be easier, and I guess we'd need to weigh if we felt like that was going to actually accomplish something, or we just making them do an online thing that maybe doesn't, you know, I don't know.
Add on the action log then, just to look at?
Let me ask a question. What additionally, ethics-wise, do you want these youth hunters to learn? What is it they're not getting in their general hunter education? What is it that precipitated the discussion about needing additional ethics training?
I think there's a certain amount of ethics that come with the different weapon types of what to hunt, when and where and how, and people around you, and that's what precipitated this from our RAC, that if the youth need to learn these kinds of things, and if they don't have a mentor around to teach them or to bring that those ethics to them, that they ought to be forced to look at some other alternative to get them that education. And I think that's why that was presented at our RAC meeting.
Can I make a comment on this?
Short one.
I think I have a little bit of a problem with this. First off, we've been issuing permits now for a few years to youth and not required this. Now to require it to the ones that we're going to have buy the tags over the counter because they bought them over the counter, and now all of a sudden we have a concern that those kids aren't as ethical as the ones that got them in the draw. That doesn't sit well with me. We have archery in the schools. We have hunter education. I mean, there's a lot of things. No kid's going to, if you're dedicated enough to go buy a bow, you're going to shoot it. You're going to have somebody give you some instruction. And there's only a certain amount you can be taught ethic-wise and, you know, skill-wise without going out and going hunting. I mean, we can pound this education into these kids all we want. They're not going to learn how to hunt unless they go out and go hunting. And my opinion, it's another roadblock to keep them out of the. I hear this a lot from people that don't like the idea of the long hunting seasons and the kids being able to get them over the counter. Well, we're going to throw up a roadblock. We want them. They're going to do it. We want to make it as hard as possible. And so I don't think it's necessary. I think our hunter education is fine. I don't think it's right to require the kids that are going to buy them over the counter to do it when we've been selling to kids now for several years and haven't required it. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander.
Now, in our general hunter education has an archery component and an ethics component to it, so they have to have it to be able to purchase this permit. So I do think it's an additional burden if we require them to do something other than what they already have, but okay. I'm, you know, not opposed to it. But it's just
I agree with Mr. Bear finally today, but I also want to applaud Mr. Lauder for bringing that to our attention earlier in his discussion. You know, I think that when they go get their certificate, that should be part of the program. If that's what's there, well, then that's part of the deal.
How much actually on archery is covered in the hunter education? Is that a night's lesson or 15 minutes of one segment? Or?
It's been a while since I've taken it.
Me too.
There's a pretty significant portion that deals with ethics overall, and there's about a two-hour segment on archery specifically. It's covered pretty well in the basic hunter education.
Okay. I appreciate that, Mike, and we wanted to hear you. Tend to agree with what's been said, particularly with John and Jake, you know. Let's not chase them off. And they're spending some bucks, and they're taking on some responsibility. It's what I had to do, which most of us had to do at some point in time when we got in this business. We've respected the Northeast region and the motion that they made. We've discussed it, but now I'm ready for a motion to move forward.
We're ready for a motion on the balance, Mr.
The
Chairman.
Balance.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the discussion, and this is one of the more timely Bucks and Bulls meetings I think we've had. And I'd like to note the time at 11:06 a.m. I'd like to make the motion to accept the balance of the presentation as presented.
Do I have a second? Seconded by Bill. All in favor of that motion to accept the balance of the Bucks and Bulls once a lifetime as presented?
Aye.
Those in favor? Unanimous?
You know, there's been times where we haven't done this till 11:06 at night. It's been pretty long. So.
Thank you. Let me just tell you, it is about 11:06, 11:07. For sake of all of us, I want to take a real quick break, but then just to let you know, at 1 o'clock we have some time certain business to take care of. So when we come back from break, we're going to have about 40 minutes to crank out the rest of this. CWMU and landowners, and I want everybody here as quickly as they can so we can take care of that and be done by noon. Thank you. 10-minute break.
Check, check.
Okay. Our next, let's see. We got Robert here somewhere. There we go, okay. All right, our next item on the agenda, item number 6, the CWMU management plans. Scott, if you want to give us your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Board members. I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division, and today I will be presenting the 2013 Buck and Bull CWMU Landowner Association recommendations for the Division. Before I get into this, let me just give a little bit of background on, I'll be talking about applications. I better explain. We receive three types of applications: a new application, a renewal application, and a change application. A change is basically an amendment to a management plan. But a new application, go through this very, very quick. I know we're time limited, but a new application is one is that it's brand new. It's never been into our system. Also, if a CWMU changes land ownership or property boundaries or acreage more than 34%, it kicks them into the new application category. And or if they did not have a certificate of registration or operate a CWMU in the previous year, they may have had a CWMU in the past, but they didn't have one in the previous year before, that would kick them into the new category. Our CWMUs are in a three-year cycle, and they renew every 3 years, and that would be a renewal application. And the change application is just an amendment to the original application and management plan. So in 2013, we had 8 new applications. 2 were due to land ownership changes. 1 increased their acreage greater than 34%. 2 did not have certificate of registrations in 2012. And then we had 3 brand new applications. 10 CWMUs required renewal for 2013 to 2015. And all 10 of those did submit renewal applications. 8 CWMUs submitted change applications requiring RAC and board approval. 4 CWMUs have moose permit reductions requested by the Division of Wildlife, and 2 of those are split recommendations. We have 1 discontinued application. They were added on to an adjoining CWMU. All in total, if everything was approved, that would bring a total of CWMUs within the state to 120. So the overview for all the CWMUs within the state, the northern region would have 71. They bear the lion's share of the CWMUs within the state. Northeastern would have 7. The central region would have 13. Southeastern, 16. And the southern region, 13. That makes a little over 2.1 million acres of property are enrolled in the CWMU program statewide. And of that, 97% of the property is privately owned land. And 444 private landowners participate in the CWMU program. For permits, the 2013 recommendations would be for deer on all the CWMUs would be 1,983 private permits, 262 public permits. We have management deer down in the southern region, management buck permits, 4 private permits, 1 public permit. For elk, 903 private permits, 137 public permits. Pronghorn, we'd have 74 private permits, 53 public permits, 49 private moose permits, and 31 public moose permits, for a total of 3,013 private permits statewide and 484 public permits, which comprise about 14% of all the permits that would be issued. I'll go through the recommendations by region. The Northern Region had three new applications. The Strawberry Ridge is an older CWMU. It's been in existence. It changed its acreage greater than 34%, which kicked it into the category where they had to submit a new application. It's for deer, elk, moose, and pronghorn, and we recommend approval of that. White's Valley and Sage Valley Outfitters are both new. They're in Box Elder County in Unit 1. The division recommends approval of both those. Those are both deer CWMUs. Had six renewal applications for Junction Valley, Rabbit Creek, Pine Canyon, Wood Canyon, Bastion Ranch, and Cotton Thomas, and the division recommends approval of all of those. Had seven change applications in the Northern Region. The Park Valley, they're just adding a pronghorn permit and they wanted to change their season dates. Deseret added some property to the CWMU and also added deer and elk permits to their application in response to changing populations and also because of the added acreage. They requested to change their season date. They had been going to October 31st, but they requested the November variance to go to November 10th. They're also asking for an elk variance request to go to the 20th of November to respond to elk, be able to try and control elk leaving the ranch and going out and depredating in some of the haystacks and also the chance of them going to Wyoming and mixing with the Wyoming elk. The other changes were basically a double cone. They had a permit split change. What it does when they change the split on their permits for elk or deer is that they're able to retain a percentage of the antlerless permits that are issued for that unit. West Hills, there was an increase in public permits. They added 640 acres to the CWMU. The number of permits stayed the same, but they added one public permit and dropped one private permit off of there. Twin Peaks Goose Creek, there's an increase in permits in both, it's for elk, and that was for both cows and bulls. State Corners, an increase in bull permits, and Hardscrabble changed the elk permit split from 85-15 to a 90-10 split. They increased the number of bull permits, and we recommend approval of all of the Northern Region change applications. We had the division recommended some changes. Anytime we have a CWMU that is within a limited entry unit, and the limited entry unit decreases the number of permits, the CWMU has to take a corresponding cut on those permits also. So we had all these were all for moose because they're in the Ogden limited entry moose unit. We had four of those, Broadmouth, Bear Spring, South Canyon, and Sharp Mountain. And the permit change that would be that if it's a little bit different because we have to keep the moose permit splits are with a 60-40 split, so we have to keep them within that ratio. They have a three-year management plan that maintains this 60-40 ratio through that management plan. So, for example, Broadmouth, South Canyon, and Sharp Mountain all had the same number of requested moose permits. All four of these units, Broadmouth, Bear Spring, South Canyon, Sharp Mountain, are in the first year in 2012 of their management plan, so they have 2 years left. The reduction would be over the next 2 years for the Broadmouth, South Canyon, Sharp Canyon would be a reduction of three permits, and Bear Spring would be a reduction of two permits. for example, for 2013, for example, for Bear Spring, there would not be any change. Their change would be in 2014. They would drop one public and one private permit. For Broadmouth, South Canyon, and Sharp Mountain, they would be changing their permits from three permits total to, in 2013, they would go from three permits total, two private, one public, to one private, one public in 2013. In 2014, they would go to one private and no public permits. That would be the change on that. The Northeastern Region applications, we had two new applications, the Crowfoot and Circle Bar Ranch. And since the RAC, we've gone and taken this to the RACs, the Crowfoot has withdrawn its application. And the Circle Bar Ranch recommended denial for reasons because although it met the technical requirements for a CWMU, it was basically two pieces that were joined by residential property, and we had some boundary and their ability to post and enforce boundaries was one of the issues that came with that also. So the division recommends denial of the Circle Bar Ranch application. Central Region, they had four applications, one new and three renewals. We recommend the Deer Creek, Chris's Creek, and Heartland West applications all recommended approval. The Crag Creek, we recommend denial of that. The reason for the recommendation for denial was because of some misrepresentations on property ownership and acreages on the application. In the Southeastern Region, we had two applications, one new and one change application. The JB Ranch is an existing CWMU. It had it is an under acreage as far as for an elk CWMU. It is one of the older CWMUs. They changed ownership, and what that is, it kicked them into the category where they had to submit a new application. It was greater than 34% change, so they had to submit a new application. And what this requires is a variance from the Wildlife Board. We have a process in the rule to where we can, it has to go through a process. It goes through a recommendation from the division and through the CWMU Advisory Committee. It has done that. We had a majority vote to recommend for approval of the variance to allow the elk into the CWMU from both the division and the CWMU Advisory Committee. At Summit Point, there's a change application. They wanted to increase their elk permits, I guess because of they increased the elk permits in the limited entry unit. It made them qualify for additional permits also. Southern Region applications, we had Drake Grazing Pasture and Johnson Mountain. We recommend the approval of Johnson Mountain as a renewal, and the grazing pasture is the same as the JB Ranch in the Southeast Region. Same thing, it changed ownership. They submitted a new application, went through the process. Both of these, the JB Ranch and grazing pasture, have successfully operated, provided as a CWMU, provided good hunter satisfaction, participated in antlerless removal, and have been very good CWMUs. And so we're recommending approval of the acreage variance and the CWMU application on those also. Okay, one thing that has come up since, this has not been presented to the RACs, but as we were doing the guidebook, it was brought to our attention that there's a September 1st opener, which falls on a Sunday in 2013. The CWMU is one of the few rules that has specific days of the year where the hunts do open. And what it's going to affect is the buck, deer, pronghorn, bull elk, buck, deer, pronghorn, and moose seasons in September 13. This is also going to affect other seasons in subsequent years. Because we have a specific date for the antlerless elk opener for the November portion of a November option for a buck hunt also. So there are basically three things that would be affected by this over the years. The reason we can't do that is because the wildlife code prohibits the wildlife board to commence any season on a Sunday. So we've come up with some possible solutions for this. Our option one, and this is our preferred solution for the division, is that we default backward. If it starts on September 1st in 2013, what we would do is a default to the day before. It would start on Saturday instead of Sunday. This is more consistent with most of our openings. Most of our openings of our big game season do start on a Saturday, so it's consistent with that. The wording for that would be, this would be an addition to the rule. It would be a subsection 3 in the CWMU rule. It would say, notwithstanding the season length provisions in this section, any season described in subsection 1 that begins on the Sunday will default to and commence the Saturday before. The other option that we do have is go status quo. It has to be legally interpreted with the rule right now that it would default forward and go to the following Monday after the Sunday, if it fell on a Sunday opener. As is, the commencement date defaults to the next lawful day within the established season, which is a Monday. It should be amended in the rule to make this state a clear directive of what we want to do. So the solution to that would be to amend the rule to replace the legal definition and do a clear direction that we should go on this. The wording would be another subsection 3, notwithstanding the season length provisions in this section, any season described in subsection 1 that begins on a Sunday would default and commence to the following Monday. That concludes the CWMU portion of my presentation. Thank you.
Any questions from the board? Ernie?
Scott, when does the CWMU rule come up for revision?
I believe it's going to come up, it's supposed to be right now, but because of the depredation rule taking precedence over that right now, I think it's going to come up in 2013 is when we're planning on opening that up for revision. 2013 to sometime in 2013, I think it'll be 2014 before it would be done.
But would an option be, instead of making a full change to the rule, just designate that for this year we're going to default backwards?
Yeah, it's probably going to be another 3 years, I think, I calculate, before this is going to come up again with any of the other seasons. If we default, we can do it either way. We can default forward or back, but without doing anything, the legal interpretation of the rule is that it automatically defaults forward to the following Monday.
That would just be making a minor change for 1 year as opposed to making a rule change without something going through the process.
That's true.
Might be a little more in accordance with the process.
What that's going to do is it's going to have all of the CWMUs, with the exception of the CWMUs that have the November deer option, all of them are not going to have a hunt on September 1st on any of the CWMUs for 2013 is what that would do.
I had a question. On your central region, you had a couple of CWMUs. Deer Creek, which you wanted to approve or recommended approval,
right.
And then Crab Creek, which you denied. Where are they located at? You know?
Could I defer that to the region? I'm not. Deer Creek, I believe, is by Deer Creek.
Oh, it's in Wallsburg. Okay.
Crab Creek.
Okay, all right. That's what I figured both of them would be. So, okay. And then on your change of dates from... If it starts on a Sunday, if you move it, if it defaults forward and you have the same number of days in the season, then you have a day overlap if one starts on one day and ends on the next. Is that why it'd be better to default backwards to a Saturday?
Well, if you default forward, it's going to, they have a 61-day season, basically. If it defaults forward, they're going to have a 60-day season. If it defaults backward, they're going to have a 62-day season. We're not going to add on to the end. We're just going to, you have to add on to the beginning. The default forward stays within the framework that's already there. Mm-hmm. The default backward puts it a day into, actually, the archery buck hunts for the CWMUs begin, the beginning of the archery hunt for elk or deer, and it goes to August 31st. What that's going to do is put it to the 31st, and it'll overlap a day into the archery hunt.
Have an overlap on the beginning of the season, not the end of the season.
Right.
And the seasons end on a date specific, so that's why you get a 1 or 2 day longer season.
Right, that's correct.
Is it a problem then if you shorten it to Monday? And you have a short season. Is that a problem if you're short the season a day?
You know, I talked to the CWMU Association about that, and they said they are okay either way. Their preference would be to default backwards to add the day instead of taking away another day. A lot of that is because of some of the CWMUs do start their hunts on that Monday because it is a prime time for the bull elk, particularly for the rut.
I see the Crab Creek again. When I served on that CWMU committee, it seems like we've had issues on that unit never ending. And I guess this denial kind of goes back a long way.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it was denied in, I believe it was 2007, and then they were not a CWMU until 2009, I believe. And they are approved at that time under certain conditions. And when those conditions, they found out were not being met. And then when the application was refiled again, there were misrepresentations on land ownership and plus all the other problems. That's why they recommended
denial. Well, I know there's been some change of hands, change of ownership on land, and just that's been a problem, so... I applaud you, your denial.
There's a number of landowners in that. It's not just one or two landowners, is it?
No, there's several.
There's several landowners. And actually, there's,
knowing the area, there's got to be a lot of landowners to come up with that many acres.
There are. I think there's four or five entities in there, one of them being Spanish Fork City, has property in there, which was not signed for either.
Any other questions from board? If not, move to the rack chairs. Any questions from the rack chairs? No questions from the rack chairs. Any questions from the audience? No questions from the audience. Rack chairs report. Start with you, Robert. You got the big area up there.
Well, we have the most
CWMUs,
let's say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The motion from the Northern Regional Advisory Council is to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the CWMU management plans and permit numbers for 2013 as presented. The vote was 7-4, 1 opposed, 1 abstention. And my minutes did not include the response from the opposing council member, but his feeling was that there should be more opportunity for the public on those CWMUs.
Okay.
The abstention was the CWMU operator on our board.
Thank you. Boyd from the Northeast.
Northeast region passed as presented unanimously.
Thank you. Fred?
Central region passed unanimously.
Thank you, Darris.
Southeast region also passed it unanimously.
And Steve?
Same in the southern region, unanimous.
Thank you, men. Okay, on the CWMU, basically it was passed. Only one abstention and one opposed and throughout statewide. Do you have a comment? Yeah, I am.
I would move that we accept CWMU management plans and permit numbers for 2013 with presented by the division to include changing the start date this year Saturday as opposed to beginning on Sunday. Previous Saturday.
Default backwards.
Can you second it, Bill?
No, I actually had a question.
Okay.
If I may.
You may.
Scott, one of the CWMUs you mentioned in the northern region, I believe it was going to drop to one private permit and no public permits for moose.
That's correct.
I thought the way the rule was written was there always had to be a certain percentage of permits allocated to the public. So how do you square something like that?
We'll let Scott defer.
Yeah, the rule says that at any time during there, it can't drop below the 40%. If the 40% has already been made in the previous 2 years, then the last year they do have the option. It's not required in the last year because the 40% of the permits have already been allocated to the public that time. The 60-40 split is with this few permits is really a hard thing to administer, and it's a lot of juggling, basically. But it does allow for that to be one private permit and no public permits, just the same as if we had a permit every other year on there would only be one permit allocated for the CWMU. It'd be alternate public and private. So.
Thank you.
Second to the motion.
Okay, before we vote.
I have a question. This is just for 1 year for this next year. It's not a change in perpetuity.
In the default date.
Yeah.
You want to restate that motion? Make sure we're clear.
Motion is to accept CWMU management plans and permit numbers for 2013 as presented with the addition that the start date for this year will be August 31st as opposed to September 1st.
Okay, before we vote, I'm ahead of myself. I didn't give the public any time to comment. I don't have any comment cards, but is there any public out there that want to comment on this, or we're going to have a vote? No comments.
Okay, I have a question. Does your vote also cover all of the – there were two CWMUs that needed a variance request. That includes them because that's part of your presentation. Is
that's
that correct?
That's correct, because okay. That was – yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
That would be the approvals, the denials, according to your presentation.
Just one other thing, when we get to the point in the future where we have another Sunday start date, then we would have to address this again, or you're going to take care of that issue when you get to the CWMU.
When we revise the CWMU rule, we will take care of that portion.
Okay, and that comes up, you say, in 2013 for 2014?
Yes, I believe that's okay. When that's going to be done.
Okay, let's take a vote. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you.
Yeah, that's an insane amount of work. I know. I watched Boyd bleed over that for years, so good job.
Okay, Scott, you're up next. Can you do this quick?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Good job.
I will be presenting the Landowner Association voucher recommendations for 2013 now. And let me just give a little bit of an overview, and I think we can do it within the time. Landowner Association is a program that we have where landowners can put their properties together in association in a limited entry bull elk, buck deer, or buck pronghorn unit to be able to qualify or to be able to receive some of those limited entry permits, a limited number of those. And that's all based on acreage. And if the landowner association is able to come up with 50% of the private lands within that limited entry unit is what makes them qualify for that. And this was done to encourage private landowners to manage their property for wildlife, and is also a means of compensation for them providing habitat for wildlife on their properties. So in for 2013, we had 14 applications we received. The Division of Wildlife recommends approval of 10 applications as received, and we had 4 split recommendations on these. For total for the vouchers that are recommended for 2013 of the 14 landowner associations, we'd have 127 deer vouchers, 3 management buck vouchers, 77 elk vouchers, and 7 pronghorn vouchers. I went through that pretty quick. Is that okay? We'll get into the split recommendations, and this slide is not to suggest that we're butting heads on this. We just haven't come to an agreement. So, the Pavant Mountain Landowner Association requested 7 bull elk permits. They qualified according to our formulas, to our policies, for 5, and the division recommends that they receive 5 bull elk permits. The reason for the reduction is because they had on the limited entry unit that it is included in had a reduction of permits, and so they had a corresponding recommended reduction on the landowner association also. Ponsagant Landowner Wildlife Association has management buck deer permits. They requested 4, they qualify for 3, and the division recommends 3 for the same reason that there was a reduction in permits on the limited entry unit that is in. South Fork of the Sevier River Landowner Association is a buck pronghorn landowner association. They requested 6. They qualified for 4 permits, and the division recommends 4 on there for the same reason, that the reduction in the permits, overall permits in the land, in the limited entry pronghorn unit that it is in. Indian Peaks Landowner Association is a bull elk landowner association. They requested 3 premium permits. They qualify for 3 regular permits, and we recommend 3 permits. The landowner, the split on this, the difference in the recommendation is that the landowner association wants premium permits, which are not allowed for in rule.
Question on that. Here a few years back, wasn't there some kind of variance or something done by the board to allow those to be premium permits on that? That unit didn't, because I know we voted against it.
I thought we voted against it.
Okay.
I don't have the history on that. I couldn't.
Boyd's shaking his head at me. So I know that was requested, and I thought it's been a couple boards ago that some of those permits I thought were made premium, and it was quite an issue of contention. So.
This is the first time in many, many years that the Vernon has not been a split recommendation.
Last year also.
Last year? Okay.
That I don't know. Sorry. Yeah, that concludes my presentation for the Bucks and Bulls Landowner Association. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
Say there are only 14 landowner associations in the state, or just that came up for approval?
There's only 14 in the state. They have to be renewed every year.
They're in every year.
Right. Yeah, there was 15 last year. One of the units, and I can't remember which one, it was somewhere over by Beaver, did not renew their application this year.
Okay. I was just wondering, there's a... The Fillmore Oak Creek South went from a limited entry to a general any season bull elk. I think we approved that in May, and we just reviewed that again.
And I believe, and I'd have to refer to Teresa, I believe that, is that the one that dropped out?
The Oak Creek? Did that drop out? Is it no longer a landowner association? Because of the... Fillmore Oak Creek South is no longer limited entry. It's a general bull elk.
Yes, because we made the recommendation for it to go to an any bull, they did not even submit an application this year.
Okay, and that was with, what's the guy's name?
Troy Babb, yes. Yeah.
Okay, yes. So that's no longer a landowner association.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
This includes, when we say landowner 14, you didn't have it on the list, but it includes the Diamond Mountain landowners out there in the northeast.
That's correct.
And the proposal is, and I want to make sure it's clear because I've fought that battle before, with a variance so that they could have a two seasons for their elk hunt out there.
Right. I think when they go, you go to the regional recommendations, the variance was requested included. For this year, okay, for the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association.
All right. Any questions from our rack chairs? Any questions from the audience? What a great audience. Okay. Summary from the rack chairs. Start with you on your end, Steve.
We passed it unanimous, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Darris.
Southeast region passed it unanimous as well.
Thank you, Fred.
Central region passed unanimously.
Boyd?
The northeastern region passed the division's recommendations on a vote of 3-2. There was some quite a bit of discussion. The Diamond Mountain Landowners Association came as instructed by rule and has, you know, over the past, since the rule was, the wording in the rules was stated that they needed to submit a variance request 30 days prior to the meeting. They submit that with their annual application, and the division has recommended approval of that. And the variance request is the landowners, because they have 150 different landowners in this association, they've asked that, you know, according to the variance, and this was worked out with the Wildlife Board, with the division and the association, for this variance opportunity to be available so that they can control the landowners, or they can control the private individuals that come on to that property, and so that they can be so that they don't have to allow people onto their properties if they don't want them on. And basically the RAC recommended approval of that 3-2. There was 2 dissenting.
Hey, thank you. That's different than most because of the numbers of owners up there.
It's the largest private landowner association in the state.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The motion from the Northern Region was to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the landowner permit numbers for 2013. The vote was 8-4, 1 against.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from the audience? Have no comment cards? Like I say, it's a great audience. In summary, all RACs approved the Landowner Association as presented, with a couple, actually a total of 3 individuals opposing it. Board discussion and motion. Board motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we accept the landowner permit numbers for 2013 as presented.
Have a second? Second by Calvin. Give him a chance, Bill. Motion has been made and seconded to approve the Landowner Association presentation as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Thank you. We'll now adjourn for lunch. We don't. She's the boss. I guarantee you.
Not that I'm being bossy.
Yeah.
But the time certain at 1 o'clock does not involve Director Sheehan, nor will we be webcasting anymore. So you had just one item on other business, and that was attendance at the January 10th meeting. If we could wrap that up now, and then you could adjourn, and we could cut everybody loose.
What's my other item?
It's WAFWA attendance.
Oh, that's right.
I just wanted to make sure. I'm not going to be here on January 10th. I'll be driving back from here at that point. So I could make arrangements to stop somewhere and get on the telephone and attend electronically if needed. But I just wondered, did anybody not planning on being there?
How about our January 10th? Everybody here but Ernie and Bill? So it should be okay. All right. And WAFWA is Mike and myself.
Never had a problem.
All right. Thank you. Now we can dismiss. Yeah.